the last set officially live. We've already been recording, that's the thing though, on the audio, so.
So how do you feel about those fights on the weekend?
I'm still fucked.
I'm still fucked. I'm still really groggy. For everyone that's like listening in, it's fine for Eastern Australian time, because you know they get a wake up at 5 a.m. and then they watch the main card, and then they later watch the main event. But by the time we saw it, it was about 4:30
in
probably.
The morning.
It was 4:30 in the morning. You know, we went to there's a casino in Perth that we go to, and we went there. That was our first time there. You know, we Joe picked me up at like midnight. We watched like 4.5 hours of fights, and then the Habib vs Gaethje started, and we were like, oh, finally.
Yeah.
They kept showing all the promos, and I was like,
just play the damn thing.
Play the damn fight.
I think we watched that Khabib versus Justin promo about, God Christ, 6 or 7 times.
Yeah, I had enough.
No, me too. I mean, it got to a point where we were just sitting in a corner because the place was so packed. And
there was no chance.
We were almost falling asleep by the time we got there. So by the time the fights were finally over and we were done, we literally had to drive, and the sun was coming up.
Yeah.
And I literally came home and went straight to bed. But dude, I could only get like 4 hours sleep, like max. Like the body would only allow that.
My body only had me 3.
Yeah. By the time I'd like got up, had a walk around and just laid in bed for a good few hours. That was pretty much my Sunday, really. I mean, it was nice, but sleeping last night was hard.
Yeah, it was hard.
The whole body clock was completely fucked up.
I feel it was worth it though, because the fights we saw, like especially like Khabib versus Gaethje, was such a big milestone for this year. Khabib did very well.
The card in general exceeded all expectations.
Yeah,
all expectations,
definitely.
Because when you put probably arguably pound for pound the greatest fighter of our generation, and we'll talk about that later on, and then you put him on a card, you have to have a good support for that one fight. A lot of casual fans, like, you know, they want to watch the card for that one fight, but the real hardcore MMA fans, they want to see like consistency throughout the card, and it delivered. Like from the moment we got there, the first fight we saw was the Tai Tuivasa versus Stefan Struve. Was top notch right from there all the way through.
It was like Stefan Struve, his nickname for the skyscraper for a reason. I think he's like 6'11.5". The dude's huge.
He was almost looked like he was a whole foot taller than Tai Tuivasa.
He did, but then he would go into like a lower stance where the discrepancy in height wasn't a huge deal. It just was mainly the length of his arms and the reach that he had. Tai did so well. Because Tai is, I think, came off a 2 or 3 fight losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wasn't doing, he just, you know, he'd even started doing wrestling camps and going to different gyms and improving his wrestling and things like that to increase his game. But he was coming into this different. I thought he looked a lot leaner than he usually is. Usually he's a bit heavier and that. He looked a lot more toned and heavier. Maybe his cardio was a bit better.
Yeah, he's a thick boy.
He is a thick boy. And he did very well. It was the last second of the round or something like that.
I think it was a buzzer beater race. Yeah, to it was the second round.
4:59 round one.
He did really, like, he came in like guns blazing. And we were saying earlier and before the fight that Stefan Struve sort of did have a massive reach advantage over him. But the way that Tai Tuivasa fought, he was pushing him a lot against the cage. And he was throwing a lot of big, heavy hands. And then when he hit him with that uppercut, even though it didn't properly connect, it still kind of knocked him down.
It looked strange because it didn't properly connect, and it wasn't on the chin. It was more on the forehead region. It didn't really connect that well, and Struve just kind of dropped from all the pressure, I think. Just the amount of pressure that Tai was putting on him. Tai did so well. Did really, really well. And he was, he almost looked so, he looked so relieved afterwards because he'd been waiting for a win for a long period of time. And then the Nelk boys show up. Nelk boys were in the UFC embedded as well.
They did a shoe with him afterwards as
they
well.
They did after his fight. He tried to...
He jumped the cage,
tried to do it. You know, I didn't know you spit in the shoe before. I didn't know.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that either.
I've never done shoes before, but I've never spit in a shoe.
Yeah. I've done... shoeys before, but I've never. I think I've done one shoey. But I've never spat in the shoe before. That's nasty.
That's disgusting.
It's pretty gross, but
especially when COVID's going around and all that. Last thing you want to be doing is spitting in each other's.
It's also a shoe, like a. It's a dirty shoe. Also from like one of the Nelk boys, so it's probably the nastiest shoe you've ever smelt ever. I'm surprised they got let in, but not other celebrities. Like, yeah. Why did the Nelk boys? Like, it was three of them.
Well, apparently the Nelk boys had some sort of deal with the UFC.
They must do because they're increasing in popularity now, especially with young people through their YouTube channel. Yeah, and then you know, usually the fighters have a deal with the UFC where they're watching the fights and they have to write something on Twitter because you know the Twitter comes up, Twitter message comes up on the screen and it will say, "So excited for UFC 254." Even was it, I think it was Lewis Capaldi, he wrote one up on the screen as well, which I wasn't expecting since he's like a more famous musician. So they must have a deal with the Nelk boys or something like that because they had the same messages on the screen.
Well, do you think that maybe now because of they've thrown out the Reebok deal, do you believe that maybe there's a little bit more access for sponsorship? Because I remember when the Reebok deal went down, fighters weren't allowed to display their own sponsors.
No.
So I think do you maybe believe that because Reebok is gone now, so were their terms and agreements?
Yeah, but I believe Venom is now the sponsor now. Mm-hmm. They haven't really transferred over like the look yet, I don't think. But Venom is the new they were the previous sponsor before Reebok and now they've reverted back to the Venom sponsorship. But I think it's just an avenue that the UFC is looking for because they're spending so much money for the UFC Fight Island to produce it and produce fights. I think it's just another avenue of fights, like get fight advertisement, I think.
Yeah.
Magomed Ankalaev versus, what's his name, Ion Cutelaba.
Yeah, Cutelaba.
Now, that's been
brewing for a while.
Brewing for a while because they had a fight. It was an issue with the ref. I would say a bad stoppage there, it was a terrible stoppage, let's be real. And then there's the back and forth, they have the fight, then someone pulls out, now this is the time where it actually got set for the rematch, and Cutelaba actually walks up into the middle of the cage, and he makes the slitting, the slitting your throat, like gesture. And we're like, all right, okay, he's coming for it. Magomed knocks him out within like the first round.
He did knock him out in the first round, and it was insane. Mm. He whacks him down. I think it was a left hook that knocked him down, and then he's punching while he's on the ground, and then Cutelaba is basically out cold, and then Magomed is Ankalaev is still punching him, basically, and then the ref stops him while he's out completely, and then next thing you know, we had a couple of fighters, including Derek Lewis, saying, "Oh shit, another bad stoppage." I thought that was funny.
That was funny.
Because I think the ref wanted to make. I think the ref. What I believe happened was the ref of the first fight must have sent the ref for this fight a message saying, "Hey man, don't stop the fight until he's out for sure."
The refs were funny this fight card. There was a few weird stoppages, and it was a bit weird.
His name Mark Zoberg or something like that. I think that was one of the referees.
That was one of the referees. Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of like really, really good talent on this UFC 254. I like it that the Khabib and Gaethje card got stacked quite heavily. I like that a lot. I believe Zabit or something like that was supposed to be on this as well, and that would have even been like icing on the cake. It's a shame that it fell through.
But in terms of delivery, we were talking about just halfway through the card that we had an issue with the fact that there was two debuts on the main card and Stefan Struve and Tyne Tavasa was on the prelims.
That was weird.
Well, that was weird. Even though the full card delivered, but we were saying that beforehand, hats off to all of the fighters, basically, that performed on the night. They definitely put up they definitely put up a great performance all around. But the fight that I thought, I don't think this should have been on the main card was the Lauren Murphy versus Lilia Shakarova. which was the fight afterwards.
Yeah.
I thought they should have taken that Stefan Struve and Tai Tuivasa, because these guys have headlined cards before.
They have.
They've headlined cards and they've been in the main card. And then you give someone their debut on the main card. I don't think that's fair. I feel like if you're going to have a debut, well, unless there's a lot of hype around them, like, you know, there was if it was like a Conor McGregor or Hamzat Chimaev, then I don't think they should be on the main card, especially when it's probably supposed to be the biggest card of the year.
The argument I think the UFC would put forward is that Lauren Murphy is coming off a, I believe it's a four fight win streak, and the woman that was, like, you know, debuting, I believe it was let's look, Lilia Shakarova.
Yeah.
She's the first female Uzbekistan.
Yeah.
So I think they were trying to, like,
hype her up
a little bit. It was a shame, though, that she got submitted in the second round by Murphy. Don't you think
it was a little bit strange that they take someone who's making a UFC debut and immediately they give him one of the top five? Lauren Murphy was fifth on the rankings.
Yeah, I believe... I found that was strange as well, but I think the Shakarova was just coming with a bit of hype and they were trying to possibly build her up in that. But Murphy's been around for a long time. I believe she's like 37 or something like that. She is.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is a veteran and she did very, very well that night, you know, submitting in the second round. A lot of the UFC 254, majority of the card were finishes, either submission or TKO. I still thought it was a very good fight while it still lasted. Shakarova she looked like she just didn't have the ground game.
Yeah, especially since Shakarova's actually come from a very, very strong wrestling background.
Yeah.
She represents Uzbekistan in wrestling. So I thought that was, to be beaten at her own game, I thought that was, again, I was a little bit curious. I mean, hats off to Lauren Murphy. But Lauren Murphy is predominantly known as being a striker. She comes from a pretty strict boxing background. Mm-hmm. And to be a wrestler and via submission, that's something, you know, that happens. Mm. But not when the person who you're fighting, like, let's say a majority of their skills are wrestling.
Yeah.
Especially when... Shakarova, most of her wins are via submission.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a bit curious.
Perhaps it was the pressure that Murphy put on her.
Yes.
I think it was the pressure that she put on, and she was quick. She was very fast to grab the neck while Shakarova was coming out. I think she just made a mistake when she was coming back up. Murphy grabbed her neck, put her straight into a rear naked choke. It looked like Shakarova was doing the right thing on the ground. You know, she was turning her chin in to make sure she had a little bit of oxygen so there wouldn't be on her artery and that, but it just didn't work out. It just didn't work out because Murphy was just, she's very, very tight as soon as she did it, you know. It was a very impressive fight, just like, you know, just like that Volkov fight with Walt Harris. That was an excellent fight as well.
That was... Well, let's start. First, we'll start by saying two things. One, Alexander Volkov, we shouldn't sleep on him. He may have lost his last fight against Curtis Blaydes, but he wanted that fight, and he wanted that. The second thing is, he probably got one of the sickest tattoos on his back I've ever seen.
He used to have this stingray tattoo on his back, and now he's changed it to a full back piece of it. It's a big, I believe it's a...
It's like a samurai mask.
It's like a big samurai mask. Yeah, he did. He did very, very well. What I found interesting was that I'd gone back and actually watched a video, and it was a mini documentary series on Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov, otherwise known as Habib's father, who passed early this year, and they went and asked him, "All right, who?" Who's a Russian fighter who you don't coach or anything like that, who do you feel is very good that's coming out of Russia? And he named three people. He said Zabit, he said he's very good. He said Alexander Volkov, and he said Magomed Ankalev. And he said, these three guys, they're very good. They're in the UFC, and I can see them really showing their colors in the next 2 or 3 years. He's right. Volkov did very well against Derek Lewis. Remember that fight? I believe Volkov was, he was beating Lewis. He was dominant. First, second, third round, Volkov was beating Lewis. But I did say to you when we were watching the fight, I said, just watch for Lewis. It's not over till the very last end of the round. And Lewis flatlines him in the last bit of the round. You know, it is unfortunate because then he went against Curtis Blaydes, who is one of the top in the heavyweight division. And unfortunately, that didn't work out for him either. But his fight against Walt Harris was very, very entertaining. You know, he's very calm and collective. And he has a difficult and different pace to other of the fighters in the division. He did very well against Walt Harris. I believe he knocked him out in the second round. And what I noticed was Walt Harris has very dynamic striking. And dynamic movement. He's got good footwork. I just found what was lacking was the end of the first round, you know, he was breathing very heavily.
Yeah, he comes from a very strong kickboxing background. And we saw this in the second round when he actually got him really, well, Harris, a really nasty teep to the body. And it was it was aimed so carefully. It was designed to like stun him. And then he just literally just went in and hit him with a barrage of basically punches. But he looked almost completely spent.
Yeah,
by the end. But he's a really, really big guy. But he's not really someone who looks like he has much of a gas tank.
No, but usually someone that does have quite dynamic footwork tends to have quite fairly good cardio to match because they have to move around to avoid these punches with that dynamic style. It's just counterintuitive sometimes because it does require quite a big gas tank. That's why some people that have quite dynamic striking and they move up a division, sometimes they don't have the same cardio and they don't move the same way because they're heavier and it expends more energy. It was unfortunate for Walt Harris because I think a lot of people, he was the people's pick because of, you know, his unfortunate thing happened to his family and that, and a lot of people were really backing him. I just believed on paper Volkov would beat him. And that's just what happened, unfortunately. And hats off to Volkov. He's done very, very well. He's got a beard now. He's got the Drago beard. And it's an interesting... where would he be now in the heavyweight division, I'd like to know?
He's seventh.
Seventh, okay.
It's weird, though, because he's dropped a rank since his last fight. But Walt Harris was 10th. So he's seventh. Walt Harris is 10th. So above him is Junior Dos Santos, which I reckon would be a good fight for him next.
Mm.
And above him is Alistair Overeem. He's fifth. But, well, depends on where he can fight next. But the heavyweight division is still quite active.
Volkov versus Overeem would be a really good fight.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that fight. Number five versus number seven. That would be a very interesting fight.
Or we could maybe get a rematch between Derek Lewis and Volkov because Derek Lewis is fourth.
That would be a really good fight because I believe Volkov was beating Lewis at the time. So just outpointing him. But Lewis, you know, the thing is, he only takes one and, you know, he really did catch him with that over right hand.
Yeah.
And
I don't believe he wants to be caught again. So I got to feel like Volkov has got something to prove when he comes around.
I think he will for sure. I think he will. You know, it was interesting because we didn't mention a different fight that was on the middleweight division. Jacob Malkoun versus Phil Hawes.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that was an interesting one because Jacob was undefeated and a lot of people were backing him. I believe he was the favorite. And
he's also Australian as well, and he's Robert Whittaker's sparring partner.
Yeah, he fights out of Sydney with Robert Whittaker. He's his main sparring partner and works alongside him. And a lot of people were expecting him to be the more dominant fighter, especially with an undefeated record of 4-0. But I did say before the fight, I said, just watch. Yeah. Just watch Phil Hawes. I said beforehand, watch Phil Hawes. He's got skills. He's very powerful. Right?
Because he was on a free fight winning streak.
He was.
And he put him...
He was an 8-2 before the fight,
And he put him to sleep. He knocked him out in the first round within like the first 20 seconds.
It was 18 seconds. 18 seconds.
And, bruh, it was brutal. I remember everybody was like screaming... when we watched the fight, everyone was like screaming at the casino, like no, and he just, remember there was that kid who was in a chair like next to us.
Yeah,
kid nearly had a spaz attack.
He had a spaz attack every fight. At the casino, there was a guy next to us sitting down, and he just would go nuts. Anytime like a character. Fighter came out, yeah, he was a character. Every time he, he just looked like a normal skinny guy, but like he was sitting in the seat, and anytime a fighter came out that he didn't like, he would put the finger and be like, "Fuck you," and like, and then like whenever they would win, he would clap, but like hysterically, to the point he was almost like on the floor.
Yeah, jumping out of the seat.
He was like having a fit. And then when Jacob unfortunately got KO'd in the first 18 seconds by Phil Hawes, he was not happy. He was very, very upset. You know, there was a lot of screeching. There was a lot of yelling. He was not happy about that. To be fair, I would have been very happy if Malcolm fighting out of Sydney would have won.
Hawes got paws.
Yeah, he definitely got paws. He's got power for sure. For me, I just felt like Hawes was a wild card because of the amount of power he has. But I would, if it was maybe a 5-round fight, I'd probably stick to Jacob, because as that fight goes longer than that, I would, some of that power fades, especially in the middleweight division and things like that. Well, the middleweight is a sweet spot, isn't it? It's a sweet spot in where people have speed as well as a lot of strength and power. Whereas when you go higher and lower, one of those variables starts to dwindle a little bit.
Well, because middleweight is about 88 kilos and
82.5.
So 82.5. And that's a good weight to be at, because a lot of fighters in the middleweight division are not, Izzy's the exception because he's really, really tall. But a lot of them are just like 6 foot jacked up guys, because it feels to them, it feels like a very natural weight if you've been training a lot of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, for example, Costa, Cannonier, Hermanson, Yoel Romero, they're all middleweights and they're all freakishly jacked guys. They got mad power as well.
So it's actually 83.9 kilos. Oh,
okay. Well, here's the one thing, just moving on, but here's the one thing I wanted to bring up. You take a guy like Hawes, he's got that mad power and those mad hands. I reckon he should be Joaquin Buckley's next fight, because Joaquin Buckley's got a little bit of hype around him. Hawes has got a little bit of hype around him now. They're both middle rate and they're both unranked.
I think that would be a really good fight. It's just that Buckley's already got a fight coming out. I think it's Jordan Wright that he's fighting next as a middleweight bout.
Who?
Jordan Wright in the middleweight division.
Okay. He's also unranked.
Yeah, I think they're trying to build up some of these unranked fighters rather than, kill or be killed and just take whichever one wins. I think they're trying to build up, and then it would be a bigger fight later down the line when they are both ranked. I think that way the UFC has like a win-win, because they've built up both fighters that they can use them. If they give them both that really tough fight at the very start, it can make things a little bit complicated. But I do understand what you mean. They're both coming with a ton of hype, unranked. Throw them in there and it would be a huge spectacle.
It would be good for a fight night.
It would be good for a fight night. It probably wouldn't sell to casuals. It would probably...
No, it wouldn't.
It would sell to people that have watched the fight themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. I mean, I'd definitely watch it.
Well, Malcolm's sparring partner, Robert Whittaker, he fought as well. Robert Whittaker, ex-middleweight champion.
Stepping up big guns now.
Yeah, well, he... The only person he's lost to in the middleweight division is to Israel Adesanya. Mm-hmm. He previously fought Till last, this year actually, not that long ago, and then he fought again.
He's fought twice in 3 months.
Exactly, and he's fought. He fought Jared Cannonier the other day. Very, very impressive. A lot of people were picking Cannonier. Yes. Israel Adesanya picked Cannonier. He said he would. He would fly through. He said, I think he's going to fuck him up bad. I think he's going to steamroll through Robert Whittaker, and I'm going to fight him next. Whittaker was already number one when he fought Darren, number one in the rankings when he fought Darren Till. Then he fought Jared Cannonier, who was number two. and he was still number one in the rankings. He's beat Jared Cannonier now. He's got to fight Izzy now.
Yeah, he's got to fight Izzy. Oh, a question though. What do you think would have happened if maybe that fight was five rounds? Because Cannonier was tough as now. Even though Izzy knocked him down. Sorry, Robert knocked him down in the second round. He was coming back hard in that final round. He wanted to keep going because in the final like couple minutes of the round, Cannonier was really turning up the heat, and Robert Whittaker was trying to use his wrestling just to hold him against the cage. He was desperately clinging on because Robert wanted to win that fight by decision.
I felt Cannonier was very, I wouldn't say off, but he seemed very reserved. And jab, that Rob had a brilliant jab. Yeah. His jab kept on connecting, kept hitting him in the nose and splitting through his guard. Rob did so well with such a fast and blinding jab. It really stopped Cannonier from starting his combinations and things like that. Whittaker kept moving, and he mixed in his wrestling at maybe the last bit of the third round, just to, Cannonier then got out of it. Rob Whittaker put the pressure back on him again. I thought Rob did very, very well, and it was just like Darren Till's, his fight with Darren Till. It was very technical, very technically sound. I think he did very, very well, and I think Robert Whittaker 2.0 is an interesting matchup for Israel Adesanya as well. I think he's learned a lot from that fight with Israel previously because he was trying to go in and just kill him. And it just doesn't work against a counter striker that's so good and so technical and skilled like Israel Adesanya. So I think he's learned a lot. And I really think that's the next fight for Izzy is Rob. I really think so. I think Izzy versus Rob 2 is an excellent, excellent fight. I feel like Izzy probably shouldn't move up to light heavyweight or heavyweight yet. Yeah, it's a strange time in the middleweight division. He's still got a few things to do. So I feel like Whittaker versus Adesanya 2 would be really, really good. You know, one's from Australian, the former champion, and one's the new New Zealand champion. So,
well, here's why I believe it's good. Because you can have it here in Australia.
Exactly.
Because in America right now, they're still not allowing fights to go on because you can't really have many people inside an arena. But in Australia, in WA, I mean, they're opening up all the allowing capacity for stadiums. So what if that changes again?
Would they be able to have it for 100%?
Maybe close to 100%, though.
If it's close, I think that would tip Dana's, little tick in Dana's box.
Yeah.
If it would be all of the occupancy, because I don't think they're very keen if it's 50% occupancy and there's social distancing and that. Yeah. I think they want to pack the crowd. Otherwise, just have it at Fight Island.
Well, it's good for the UFC and it's good for Perth as well, because we were meant to have a card here in Perth. Valentina Shevchenko was meant to be fighting.
We were supposed to have a UFC 254. One, and that was also meant to be Volkanovski versus Holloway 2.
There you go. And that was going to be here in Perth. And I'm pretty sure that thing would have just sold out.
It would have very, very easily. You know, I was already looking at prices for tickets and things like that, but they hadn't been released yet. COVID hit at probably the perfect time. And it just didn't work out, unfortunately, yeah.
So that would be so good. You know, Whittaker versus Adesanya 2 in Perth. And you can even have all the Australian fighters on the card. Maybe you can get Dan Hooker as the co-main event. Hooker. That would be good. Get Ty Tavasa, you know what I mean? Get the New Zealand fighters, you know. Let Robert Whittaker, Sparring Piker, Jacob have a rematch, have another match. Or get the New Zealand fighters like Kai Kara Vance to fight. Or, other New Zealand fighters. Mm. And hell, maybe in the undercard or in the co-main event, you can also have Volkanovski fighting. In featherweight, either way, I mean, there's a lot of Australian talent out there that's ready to go, and there's a lot, and obviously Perth will probably be the best place to have it.
Yeah, and it's not like they don't have a UFC gym here or anything like that, or other MMA gyms to go to in order to set that up. I feel like that would be, they could do that. I think it would be a really good way to bring about a bit of investment to Perth as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be really good if they could fly the fighters here.
But here's one thing that was sort of on my mind. I kind of feel like before Whittaker has a rematch with Izzy, I feel like maybe Cannonier and Robert might have a rematch. I feel like they should run it back.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like letting Robert Whittaker fight Izzy is a little bit too soon.
I disagree.
Because it's been less than a year.
I think it's been less than a year, but it's not like they did it straight away.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, there was the Conor and Diaz one. And Conor didn't even fight anyone, and neither did Diaz. And they went and set it up right away.
Mm.
Rob, dominant champion, I think he was 8-1 before he fought Izzy. 8-1 in the UFC, in the middleweight division. You know, he was a dominant champion, beating Yoel Romero twice, all these other fighters and that. Izzy beats him. Then Rob fights twice in a short period of time. You know, he fights Darren Till, mm-hmm. beats him unanimously. And he beats Jared Cannonier unanimously as well. I don't feel he was maybe looking for the knockout, but if it presented itself, that's fine.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were saying if Rob, you know, knocks him out in a very devastating fashion, then they'll sort it out, right? They'll do it. I feel like Whittaker, he deserves that rematch with Izzy. I think he deserves that title fight. To fight Darren must have been number 5 or something like that. If for number 5... I believe Darren Till was number 5 at the time. Fought number 5 and he fought number 2. Already as number 1 for both of those fights. I believe he deserves a title fight.
Well, what if they set up a Costa versus Whittaker fight?
Not a bad fight. I don't think Whittaker was really that bothered who stands in his way. I think he just wanted to fight Izzy again sometime down the line. I'm down for that. Costa versus Whittaker would be a great fight as well. I feel like Whittaker deserves it mm-hmm. because Whittaker got knocked out in the second round. Costa got knocked out in the second round. You know, Costa hasn't fought anyone, whereas Whittaker has fought 2 people unanimously. They weren't split decisions. They were unanimous decisions. I feel like Whittaker still deserves it. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe Costa, you know, Costa versus who else would... Maybe Costa versus Jared Cannonier or something like that, because Cannonier is number 2.
Or Hermanson, he's number 4.
Yeah, that would be... like a Till Hermanson winner or something like that. You know, that would be good as well. I feel like Whittaker deserves that next title fight. I really do. I think so.
It will happen, but it will have to happen at some point... I would say a few months into next year.
It would, because Whittaker, he said, you know, I'm going to be skinny Rob for a little bit and then I'm going to put all the plans aside because I've got Christmas and he's going to get fat for Christmas. And then after that, I believe his daughter is being born in January.
Oh, yeah. I think he's got another one. I think he's got 3 kids.
I think he does. He's got a few.
Yeah, and he's got another one on the way. So I understand that totally makes total sense. Yeah. Anyway, so moving on to the big cheese,
Khabib versus Gaethje.
Wow.
So a lot of people were really betting on Gaethje. Gaethje was Khabib's kryptonite.
Yeah, I was betting on him as well. Well, I think we both said that Khabib will probably win, but it would be via decision, and Justin Gaethje will probably give him a run for his money. Did he? Not really. I just feel like, regardless of people saying, oh, everyone was sleeping on Justin Gaethje's wrestling ability and his ground game is really, really strong because he's been wrestling for a while, I feel like Khabib just walked all over him completely on the ground. If he got that submission in the first round, like 10 seconds earlier, he would have won.
Yeah,
his ground game was so fluid and so slick.
Khabib's pressure was just like the main point. His pressure, his wrestling, and then that first takedown. Before the takedown, Gaethje was connecting with some really good kicks, some really good right hands that were hitting flush, nice hooks, and then Khabib tries to take him down, and the way he defended that takedown was very good. You know, that impressive wrestling style. Did very, very well tucking his chin in, quickly moving away, disengaging, getting back into the stand-up. I thought Gaethje did well in the first round. And I think up to maybe the last takedown where Khabib was on him, you might have gave it to that round to Gaethje. It was a very close round.
Yeah.
But
Gaethje's, was it Khabib's pressure was just so much. He was just walking through Gaethje's shots. Everyone thought that, oh, you know, Khabib's obviously going to try and wrestle with him, but he did. But he's going to try and avoid him. And Gaethje did a lot of running around in the first round. He was trying to stay away from the corner as much as possible, because he knew that once he got too close to the corner, Khabib would just take him down and just push him against the corner and put him into a submission. Gaethje was expending a lot of energy in that first round, just trying to make sure he's, pardon me, kept moving, stayed away from, stayed close as he could towards the middle, stayed away from the end.
He was trying his best to, as he was trying to circle around the cage as quickly as possible. As soon as he felt like his back was too close to the cage, he was like, fuck, I've got to get around. And he would try and circle. But it does expend a lot of energy when you've got Khabib's pressure. And we already said this before the fight. Khabib's conditioning is very, very good. You know, the conditioning that they have at AKA is very, very good, especially with that ground-and-pound style. He doesn't get tired often. Not really. Gaethje in that first round, I believe he looked good in the first round. In the second round, it just started to change. You know, Khabib takes him down. What some people had noticed beforehand is Justin doesn't, he's, he was already anti-wrestling, but we've never seen him really, he doesn't often do submissions. Not that often. His ground control and his jiu-jitsu hasn't really been that shown in the UFC. So that was questionable as well. You know, Dustin Poirier couldn't do much about Khabib, and he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. A lot of people were really betting on Ferguson because Ferguson has that awkward style, that front kick, that push kick that keeps him at bay out of that really close wrestling range, and the rubber guard and the no-gi Jiu-Jitsu under 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu would have been a really good tool in his arsenal.
Well, here's the thing now. After Khabib beat Gaethje via triangle in spectacular fashion, and then we had Khabib, it was a very, very emotional moment for him in the cage. And, you know, he obviously said, no, let me give him a piece. And he was crying on the ground. And, you know, obviously because he lost his father and he carried on without him. And then he said, look, this is it, hanging up the gloves now. You know, I'm done. I said to my mother, I won't go on without my father, you know, because his father had been there since the end, since the beginning. But one thing that's everyone's minds is Tony versus Khabib will never happen. And it's official. That card was cursed. And it was just never meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of sad because I would argue, well, we can have the argument right now about who the GOAT is. And right now, after everything that Khabib has gone through, like, he fought with a broken foot. Dana said 2 weeks before the fight, he broke two of his toes and he kept going on. And after losing your dad and, you know, and he had an undefeated record. I got to say, right now, I feel like Khabib is the one, number one for GOAT status. Now, there's a lot of argument, but then again, a lot of people say, oh, Khabib's not the GOAT unless he fights Tony. But Tony's lost. So did that. When we were saying in the last podcast, I don't think the fight's going to happen anymore. I don't think it's worth it.
I wish it happened earlier. It's just, it's a shame that it got stuffed. You know, the main thing about Khabib versus Tony is it should have happened because of Tony.
Yeah.
Because Tony stylistically would have been the greatest mismatch for Khabib. But, you know, it's some of the blame falls on Tony too. Because Tony could have waited, right? Instead, he chose to make weight anyway and then fight Gaethje, who he lost to.
Mm-hmm.
Because stylistically, that didn't match up for him. In the striking game, Gaethje overpowered him, and he stole that. You know, in the press conference, Gaethje actually said, I'm not supposed to be here. Tony Ferguson is supposed to be here. But I stole his shot, and I stole his soul, and that's what he did. He beat Tony. Tony probably should have waited.
Yeah.
Tony should have waited because, you know, he'd been waiting so long for that title fight to be the unified lightweight champion. He should have should have waited. He really should have waited because he's the second interim lightweight. He's a two-time interim lightweight champion. He should have waited because, yes, the fault is on Khabib because Khabib pulled out at one point for some reason. I think there was some reason Khabib pulled out, and there was another reason Tony Ferguson pulled out was also because he tripped as well on that loose wire. So maybe it's a cursed fight.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the blame of both of the fighters. It might just be one of those fights we never see. You know, it is a shame. I would love to see the 30th fight of Khabib's career to be with GSP. Mm-hmm. A catchweight possibly, although the UFC doesn't like catchweights. The only thing I'm seeing how that could still materialize is because Dana has this respect for Khabib and says, look, he's done so well. It's a nice farewell. We'll do catchweight. Everyone knows Khabib. Everyone knows GSP. Let's have a really good fight. GSP's out of his prime. Khabib is in his prime. Doesn't matter. They should fight now.
Have a super fight.
They should have a super fight at catchweight. And I think it could work. I think it could work. It's just, it gets a little bit funny. The lightweight division gets strange now because if Khabib retires, then shouldn't they have vacated the lightweight belt already? It hasn't been vacated yet. Has not been vacated yet. And his manager, Ali Abdulaziz, was responding to a lot of people saying, hey, who's going to fight for the vacated belt? He says, he wrote back, the belt hasn't been vacated. He's retired. So So perhaps the retirement meant he was trying to perhaps force the GSP fight. Or perhaps Ali Abdulaziz is just talking a little bit of shit. Either way, I think the lightweight division has got very interesting because now the path to the lightweight championship has now changed.
Yes.
Dustin?
Well, one of the questions they asked at the press conference towards Dana was that they said, hey, they're planning to have Dustin versus Conor on January 23rd. And one of the journalists asked, oh, could that possibly be for the interim belt?
Hmm. That would be interesting. It's almost like you could maybe do a lightweight championship tournament where you've got Chandler, Hooker, Poirier, McGregor, Ferguson, and you match those up and see what happens. I think maybe you can chuck in a few others, maybe some wild cards, maybe a Kevin Lee or something. Maybe do a Kevin Lee versus a Michael Chandler or something like that, you know. I believe Chandler wants a top five, but I think Lee is number seven in the ranking, so not that far off.
We got to respect Michael Chandler because he made weight.
He made weight?
He was ready to go, and he made weight, and then just got sent home.
Professional.
Yeah, very professional. He even rocked up, and they did a promo for him at the UFC event, so.
Yeah, I think it was good that they still acknowledged Michael Chandler was an ex Bellator champion who'd beat former UFC champions, and he now come to the UFC, and now they're trying to build him up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lightweight division has got very interesting now, because if Khabib is gone, the real kind of boogeyman of the lightweight division, you know, you've got Ferguson, Chandler, McGregor, Dustin Poirier, Hooker. You've got a ton of people at lightweight. Kevin Lee, Charles Oliveira. You've got a lot of interesting names now. I would like almost to see it's like freshening up the lightweight division, I think. I think Conor fights Dustin. I think Tony fights maybe Michael Chandler or a Dan Hooker or something like that. And they start to build up their interim lightweight belt, and then they have maybe someone fights Gaethje, and they are the new UFC lightweight champion. I think that would be an interesting fight in the lightweight division. It's got interesting. You know, Khabib was often the worst stylistic matchup for anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Maybe you could make the argument for maybe Ferguson or a Michael Chandler because of Chandler's wrestling and Ferguson's, you know, ground game on his back, right? A lot of his submissions have been off his back using, you know, the rubber guard and a lot of triangles that he likes to enjoy and maybe even a few dast chokes that he uses often. Or Conor McGregor, because, you know, Conor McGregor, let's be real. A lot of people said Conor McGregor did really shit about against Khabib, but his takedown defense was technically better than Gaethje's. And, you know, and he wasn't the one with this huge grappling background. I still feel that McGregor was, out of anyone who fought Khabib, McGregor did the best. Because he, at least he took a round off him.
Yeah.
I believe round three of their fight, he definitely took off him. Yeah. He makes the argument maybe 1-4 or something, but I don't know about that.
Well, we'll also never get that Conor versus Khabib rematch.
He doesn't want to go anywhere near it. He doesn't care. You know, he says, you know, they said, oh, maybe they'll put, maybe I'll, like they've said, put forward, oh, I'll fight the person who wins out of Poirier versus McGregor. And he goes, I'm not really interested. I've choked both of them out.
Yeah.
Why would I want to fight them? It does nothing for my legacy. And I believe Khabib's estimated net worth is around 30 million, although his father said he's worth 100 million. Not too sure about that. I believe he is worth more than 30 million because his disclosed earnings is close to 30 million. Then he's got his other businesses, you know, he's got his apparel, he's got clothing. What was interesting though, he's actually been invited to the Kremlin by Vladimir Putin.
What, really?
Yeah, he's flying from Abu Dhabi either today or tomorrow, and he'll arrive in Moscow and he'll be going to the Kremlin where he'll be introduced again to Putin because he's met Putin before with his father. So that, what an honor as well. That's really interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Should we leave it there?
I think we should.
It's a quick one.
Thanks everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed UFC 254 just like us. We really, really enjoyed it. It was such a stacked card. Yeah, really, really amazing. Unfortunately, Jacob didn't, our fellow Australian didn't win. However, you know, it was a good night also for Ty Tuivasa, an Australian, and Robert Whittaker, fellow Australian as well. So, you know, it is good to see some of our Australian fighters starting to get pushed a little bit more, and they're doing well in their respective divisions. So thank you so much for listening, guys.
Take care, guys. All the best.
Peace. Thank you. Bye-bye.